Picture this. You're halfway through a DIY car fix, tools scattered everywhere, and boom, you realize you're missing a part. It's okay, because you know whatever it is, it's on eBay. They've got everything. Brakes, headlights, cold air intakes, whatever you need. And it's guaranteed to fit, which means no more crossing your fingers and hoping you ordered the right thing. All the parts you need, at prices you'll love. Guaranteed to fit, every time. eBay. Things. People. Love.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello and welcome to the WTF1 podcast for our Spa Preview podcast with myself. And I've got James back again with us once again. Now, there was some really big news that literally dropped today in the Formula One world. And it's kind of one of those secrets that everybody knew about. And it is that Esteban Ocon has been signed as a Haas driver for the 2025 season alongside Oliver Bearman. Now, we spoke about this, and you said when we did our predictions a couple of weeks ago, maybe last week, you said you don't think Esteban Ocon is the right fit at Haas and Kevin Magnussen would be better. Now this being confirmed, what are your thoughts?
Now it's been confirmed. I mean, I still feel the way I feel. Like, I do think Esteban Ocon deserves to be on the grid somewhere. I feel bad about how he left Alpine, given that he was there before Pierre Gasly. But I don't think he's the right fit to be paired with a rookie driver at Haas. I'm a big fan of him, and I hope that he proves me wrong.
I think he gets more hate than he deserves as a Formula One driver. I think he's had some really strong teammates in the past, and he's gone toe-to-toe with all of those teammates. Fernando Alonso at Alpine, I think, you know, put a good fight, in all fairness, up against Fernando Alonso and worked well. Alpine, and yes, okay, he comes to blows a little bit too much with teammates, and sure, that is certainly something that needs to be looked upon. But I think in terms of performances, Sergio Perez has been good up against Sergio Perez, and people will look at Sergio Perez now and be like, what do you mean? Sergio Perez is an awful driver. Max Verstappen is wiping the floor of him. I think Sergio Perez, for me, is in regards as Valtteri Bottas as a Formula One driver, a really good driver, a great Formula One driver, somebody who can get you race wins and get you some good results in a top team, but will not be world champion material. And I think he's had a harder time than Valtteri Bottas did in Mercedes, because I think that car in Red Bull is just so very much tailored to Max's style that it does make it difficult for those other drivers who might not drive. I think Max just drives in such a unique way that nobody else can handle it. So I think Sergio Perez is a great driver. And I think that the fact that Esteban Ocon went up against him so early on and you know, performed well against someone like Perez, then performed well against someone like Fernando Alonso, and then is doing great up against Pierre Gasly, who is another driver who was regarded as a really strong driver after his drop back to AlphaTauri after the disappointment in Red Bull. So I'm excited for him. I'm glad that he's still on the grid. And yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do in Haas. I think it's what they need. They need a driver who is strong, can get those results, but also slightly more experience, because if they had two rookies, they're going to have the same problem they had in 22. And if they maybe had someone like Kevin Magnussen, I just feel like he's been underperforming quite a bit compared to Nico Hülkenberg.
I'm excited to see this mix. Haas is definitely on the rise, and I hope that's not exclusively due to Nico Hülkenberg's performance. Mm-hmm. So I'm really interested to see this entirely new driver lineup next year.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, I don't think it's massively down. I think Hülkenberg's dragging more out of the car for sure. But in terms of where Haas are going, they've actually surprised a lot of people. I think they've been everyone's biggest surprise on the grid. Because I don't know if you remember at the start of the season, Komatsu came out and said, we're finished, basically. We're going to be at the back of the grid. We're going to be last. And he's absolutely hustled everybody.
I think he did that on purpose to set the bar extremely low and to temper everybody's expectations. So if they got any points whatsoever, it would be considered a massive victory. So I think that was a very smart calculation on Ayo's end. Yeah.
So for the rest of the season, what do we reckon because we say this, I think, every podcast now. Now that those dominoes are starting to fall into place, Haas is now locked off. We've got two drivers there. For maybe Kevin Magnussen, do you think his time is potentially then up? Obviously, he was announced a bit earlier that he wasn't going to be part of Haas, but do you think he can find a seat elsewhere, or do you think potentially for Kevin Magnussen, it's going to be back to maybe an IMSA or maybe IndyCar for him?
Yeah, I like Kevin Magnussen a lot, but I don't see a place for him on the grid right now. I probably see the next logical step for him being IndyCar, and I think he would thrive there.
Yeah, he did really well, I think, in IMSA. Formula E, I suppose, is also an option because I know a lot of drivers who fail to find their footing in Formula 1 are moved over to Formula E. I think maybe more of them now are sort of going a bit more towards IndyCar, which I would love because I've really got into IndyCar in the last season and a half, and I think Kevin Magnussen would be a good fit over there. And also, one thing I really love about IndyCar, I feel like, is the drivers are so unhinged. They can say whatever they want. So Kevin Magnussen going to Nico Hülkenberg, suck my balls, mate. I think we could get a lot more of that, like less media trained, less pressure to be so polished and just say what you want. And I think, you know, there's going to be some great things that would come out of Kevin Magnussen if he went to IndyCar.
I want to see Kevin Magnussen and Santino Ferrucci go toe-to-toe and see what that interaction's like.
Yeah. Santino Ferrucci. Not on a lot of people's good books. But, I think Kevin Magnussen would have quite a few things to say there. But also, reuniting with his old Haas teammate, Roman Grosjean, if he still managed to find a seat for future seasons as well. Like, that relationship coming back again between those two.
Yeah, that would be fun to see. I'm curious to see where Roman Grosjean goes in IndyCar. I know we're not talking too much about IndyCar, but his stay in IndyCar has been very interesting to me because I thought, like, at the beginning of last season when he was in Andretti, he was putting up some really good performances but couldn't close. And now he's kind of at Yuka Solinger, and like, I don't know where if he loses a seat there, I don't know where he's going to go. But would love to see them reunited.
Yeah, I don't know where he would go either. I feel like he's just slowly dropping off. Like, had those couple of years in Andretti, had that chance to maybe get the win. I think there was a lot of hype around Roman Grosjean for people getting into IndyCar from Formula One, following him, I suppose, and being like, oh yeah, I reckon he could do well here. Formula One's so much better than IndyCar, so he's going to wipe the floor with those drivers over there because, you know, IndyCar drivers aren't good. And then, had some really strong performances, but as you say, unable to close. And I think that as the seasons have gone on, the mistakes that he always, the inconsistencies he had in Formula One are still starting to show. And maybe he's going to slowly move further down the grid.
One thing that Romain Grosjean is better at than any other driver in Formula One and IndyCar is taking the most awkward selfie possible.
he is like a 60-year-old man.
I say he poses for photos like a 6-year-old, like, child star, like a musical theater kid who just like loves the spotlight. There's something weird going on there. Still love the guy, but his social media presence is something that will be studied years to come.
Another thing to say about Roman Grosjean, right? And I did not know this until I think maybe it is an influence of IndyCar and going over there. But that man is absolutely wham. Like, the forearms on Roman Grosjean are probably about the size of my leg. They are that big. Like, he's gone over to IndyCar. Yeah, mate, he's huge. There was a picture that he posted on his Instagram, I think it was like a year or two ago, and it was like him doing some surfing. And his rig, he is very well maintained, and he is absolutely massive as well. And then when he's stood like that with his forearms crossed, but they are bulbous. They are huge. And I was like, okay, don't mess with Roman Grosjean. All right? He will absolutely get you in a chokehold.
He has the forearms of Popeye the Sailor Man.
He really does. He really does. Do you reckon it's spinach for him as well? Or is it something else that he's some sort of Swiss cheese?
He's like, he's like Swiss French. So it could be some sort of like Alpine Swiss.
Speaking
a lot of protein in that.
Let's move over to Alpine. And
what a great segue, by the way.
What a great segue. Alpine are in talks with Mercedes about them becoming their new engine supplier, which would mean that Mercedes would have ticked off half the grid of having an engine supplier until, of course, Aston move over to Honda. When we go, I believe it is 2026 regulations, they're moving over to the Honda engines. Do you see this having legs? Because obviously Alpine, part of the Renault group, but then Renault in terms of, I mean, they've supplied engines for so long, the Red Bull days, you know, Red won championships with Red Bull, and they've been in Formula One for so long. But in recent years, especially, I think, since the hybrid power units have come into it, they've just really been a bit of a laughing stock in terms of performance. Honda were the laughing stock at the beginning, but they've turned that around to become an engine that is very, very solid, really, really strong, and have won championships with Red Bull. Whereas Renault power units have always just been very mid. A lot of problems in the early days, but not a lot of performance now in the most recent years. And maybe them dropping off and disappearing wouldn't be a massive loss for Formula One.
Yeah, I remember at the beginning of the year, they admitted right off the bat that their power unit was far behind any of the competitors. And they themselves did not have confidence in it. They have no customer teams. I don't see them having a lot of incentive to continue to manufacture engines or power units for Formula One cars. If there's no other teams that want to buy them, they're clearly behind. I think they should focus on Alpine and Renault as a Formula One team brand, as opposed to being a manufacturer of a power unit. Allow themselves to go to Mercedes or go to Ferrari or go to Honda and get a power unit from them and just focus on being a team. I do think it's a little strange that we're going to get to the point where half of the grid is having power units supplied by Mercedes. We should just change the name of the series from Formula One to Formula One, Formula Mercedes / Ferrari and sometimes Honda.
Maybe teams should be only allocated and allowed to do three teams across the season. We get in and, you know, another two teams to Formula One. We have 12 total, and then you're only allowed to supply three teams. Kind of like you have the manufacturers, I think it is, in Formula E, and then you also have the engine Constructors Championship in IndyCar, where it's Chevrolet versus Honda. And obviously their points stack up in their own sort of championship that they have against each other. And it's not just necessarily a case of those quiet talks that people have. There's an actual, you know, there's an actual graphic shown between those two engine manufacturers and who has the most points and which ones were the best over the season. And maybe something like that could be looked in, because, yeah, Mercedes powering so many teams. It just goes to show that maybe Mercedes have got things right for 2026, and they're showing a lot of promise at the moment for those regulation changes, that a lot of people want to go to them rather than maybe going to Ferrari or looking at Honda or even the Red Bull, you know, powertrains that they're going to be providing for themselves in the future, partnering up with Ford as well. So it is something that does need to be looked at, but this is something that could be really good for Alpine. I've always been a bit of a put Alpine down, in all fairness, in the past, because they've never really come out and said, this is how we're going to make ourselves better. You know, it's always a case of our goal is third in the championship. That's our goal. But they never really explain how to get there. Wherever Aston, Lawrence Stroll, Big Daddy Stroll is always like, we're going to build the best facilities. We're going to get the best people. And that's how we build the best car. And it makes sense. Whereas Alpine's just like, how? We're just going to do it and we're going to get to third. And it doesn't really fill you with confidence. So picking up Mercedes as an engine could be a step forward for them to move themselves away from that back five to the top five.
Here's a question. If they decide to commit to making this change and Alpine decides to get power units from Mercedes, how does that change the landscape of the driver's market?
I think it would sway those drivers, maybe someone like a Carlos Sainz, who would be more likely to sign for Alpine if they're like, we are going to these engines for the future, so we will be better. Because if they're already saying that the Alpine and the Renault engine is down, moving to a Mercedes engine is already an upgrade and already a step forward in performance. Someone like a Valtteri Bottas would also see that as an option. Someone who raced with Mercedes engines all the way up until, you know, he left Mercedes and went to Alfa Romeo and is driving for Sauber for this season. So that could also be an option for him, to something that he's more suited with, understands Mercedes engines and wants to maybe stick with them. So yeah, I think it would definitely sway it a little bit more in their favor if they're talking with teams. But also potentially that could be a deal struck with someone like Toto Wolff from Mercedes, that, okay, cool, take on Mick Schumacher as a driver for 2025 to replace Esteban Ocon, and in return, we're going to give you a discount on some Mercedes engines.
Yeah, I'm interested to see if that's going to change the way... I'm interested to see if that's going to change the perception of some of the drivers that are still available, especially Carlos Sainz. My question for you as a long-time Formula One fan, is there a bias between customer teams and teams who are engine suppliers?
I believe there used to be. I believe there used to be like the... I feel like... I don't know whether it was just like rumors or what you kind of expect, but the obviously the works team would get maybe some of the upgrades to the engine first before the customer teams for that engine. But now I'm pretty sure it's set in the rules that those who supply engines but also have a team, which is of course now every team on the grid, apart from I suppose maybe Honda going to Aston Martin or being with Red Bull, it's not a Honda team really, it's a Red Bull team. So they're supplying, you know, Red Bull, our customer team, or were a customer team with Honda, and Aston Martin will be as well. But yeah, you have to, whatever upgrades you put on your car's engine, you have to make sure that they also are supplied to your customers at the same time. So I don't think there's too much of a bias. I suppose if, for example, at the moment, I suppose with McLaren performing better than Mercedes, you're being beaten by your customer team, which is something you don't really want. Whereas if you are a works team and you're Mercedes and you're only supplying engines for yourselves, that's obviously going to give you a benefit if you have the best engine. Those other teams won't be able to have that performance advantage on you.
Fair enough. All right. Moving on. Next up, can we talk real quickly? I know this isn't directly Formula One related. Can we talk about Teo Pourchaire's like insane weekend that he had?
Flying halfway across the world on last minute call, driving for Arrow McLaren. We talked obviously on the last podcast about Max Verstappen's lack of sleep. I think Teo Pourchaire actually had less sleep than Max did for his weekend.
I have a breakdown here for it. If you aren't familiar about this, if you aren't following IndyCar, Alexander Rossi of Arrow McLaren broke his thumb in practice at the Toronto Grand Prix, IndyCar Grand Prix. They called Teo Pourchaire in last minute. I have the timeline here.
Okay.
6 p.m., Arrow McLaren announces Rossi will not race due to injury. 6:10, Tony Kanaan calls Pourchaire to gauge his interest. 6:37, so just 27 minutes later, Teo Pourchaire's flight is booked to Toronto from Nice. 6:45, Arrow McLaren shop manager picks up Pourchaire's fire suit and seat, drives overnight to Toronto from Indianapolis. 10 p.m., engineers send onboard footage and race prep to Pourchaire. Midnight, Pourchaire departs from Nice, France for Frankfurt, Germany. 1:30, lands in Frankfurt, goes to race prep with Kanaan during layover. 4 a.m., departs for Toronto, Tony Kanaan goes to bed. 12:30 p.m., Pourchaire lands in Toronto, takes an express train to Union Station from the airport. 1:22, arrives at Union Station, downtown Toronto, meets with crew members that drive him to the track. 1:43, Pourchaire heads to the garage for seat fitting 62 minutes before quali.
It's actually mental. It's actually mental, so last minute coming in. But fair play, you know, fair play, jumping in the car. And I know there was obviously lots of talks and lots of... obviously, McLaren Arrow have had a lot of drivers go through their system recently, and they actually made a really good meme, picking up the Spider-Man meme of all them pointing together. And obviously, Callum Ilott wasn't there, so they also got the cardboard cutout of Callum Ilott to be pointing, which I think was absolutely incredible. But the fact that everyone was being like, oh, okay, you know, they've clearly done Theo Pourchaire really, really badly, like, they're a horrendous team, all this, all that. If they were such a horrendous team and they did him so badly, I don't think he would have gone back so last minute. Yeah. He probably would have turned it down. So yes, okay, he's probably disappointed that his seat was taken away from him and given to somebody else so last minute beforehand anyway. But I think there is still the potential for a working relationship. And it's a shame for Pourchaire that he hasn't found his way into Formula One, because he's such a young talent to, you know, win Formula Two at such a young age. I think he was one of the youngest, if not the youngest, race winner in Formula 2, winning, I think it was in Monaco a few seasons ago. And the fact that he doesn't have a drive in Formula One is absolutely horrendous. And I do worry for drivers that do go over to IndyCar how difficult it is to come back. Because I think like Pato Award is such a huge talent, but also such a huge personality. And those things usually go hand in hand, don't they, to try and get a driver into Formula One or into a seat. And the fact that he's, you know, struggling, kind of locked in, I don't think he will get a chance unless Lando Norris somehow, you know, Max goes to Mercedes, Lando's then picked up by Red Bull, and there's a space at McLaren, and Zak Brown's like, cool, yeah, Pato Award, in you go. That's the only way I could see it happening, but I don't see that happening. So I think once you go to IndyCar, it is kind of difficult, because I think a lot of people from the European Formula One, because Formula One is very much European, it's a world championship, but it's very much European. And I think, unfortunately, they look over at IndyCar as a lesser.
Yeah, I think once you drive an IndyCar, motorsport world sees you as that and nothing else, right? And so it's hard. I think you're right. I think it's hard to go back. But I do hope Teo Pourchaire finally does get a shot in Formula One. But there's just such a bottleneck with only 20 seats and so many drivers who are qualified enough to be on that grid. I hope he gets a shot. I don't know where it's going to be, but while he only qualified 26th at the Toronto Grand Prix, he finished the race P14. So given that he had absolutely no prep and had this like whirlwind trip to Toronto, you know, 36 hours before, had no idea he was racing and finished P14 out of 27 cars. That's pretty impressive in my opinion.
It's absolutely huge, especially on such a big grid. I know people would listen to that and go, P14, it's not that good. You're outside the points. Well, IndyCar gives points down to every position who finish. And from one great segue earlier into another, let's talk about the point system that has been denied, where they wanted to extend the points past 10 positions. That's no longer going to happen. I'm very split on this, because part of me would like to see more points awarded in races. But also part of me does like the fact that you are fighting for a top 10, and top 10 is such a glorious exclusive club.
I think that especially last year when we had Max Verstappen's dominance, the most interesting part of a lot of the races were the races in the middle of the grid, were the midfield races, were the races that were was the action that was happening like P9 to P15. And I think a lot of fans wanted there to be some sort of points awarded within that range, because they want those fights on track to have stakes, right? I think now when there's more competition at the top of the grid, like we're seeing this season, there's less of an argument for expanding the point system. But in ages of dominance, I totally see why you'd want that. Last year, I'd be like, everybody, if you finish the race, you should get some form of points.
Yeah.
But right now, I'm like, maybe 1 through 10 is fair.
Yeah, I think from being down there, and we've actually added it in a series. We do a creator series on Formula One in the game, and we've actually extended points down to 15th, because it was such a different class. It was very much like Formula One, but we had equal cars, because we're creators, we're not esports drivers, and we have a lot of different varying abilities, which is very similar to obviously you having varying performing cars. So those at the bottom of the grid would always be at the bottom of the grid, and you know, they're nothing really to fight for. They're outside the top 10, it's cool, you know, but they could be fighting hard if they wanted to for a P12. But because it's no points, it's like, well, what's the point of it? Whereas now, because we've extended down to 15th, there are those fights going on. It's like, I want to get this P12, regardless of who it is. I need to beat this driver for P12. I'm going to fight really, really hard for this position. And I think that that's what it could potentially create. And that's what I would hope. In theory, you know, it doesn't mean it's always going to work out. But in theory, I would like to think that teams and drivers would fight a lot more for each and every individual position. And therefore, each and every individual position is kind of showcased and hyped up a little bit more. It's not just a case of, oh, okay, and Valtteri Bottas and Kevin Magnussen are just trading positions and going wheel to wheel for 17th at the moment. It's obviously not a shouting match. It's not gonna be like, oh my god, what a move, this is a huge battle. No, it's gonna be a bit more emphasis, but not obviously that much, because it's still only for like a handful of points. I do think finishing a race less so nowadays is obviously as rewarding as maybe, you know, back in the day when the reliability was so dreadful. But still, it makes those things easier as well in the championship at the end of the season when you've got so many drivers on 0 points. You say, well, this person is ahead of him because he's actually got 5 11th places and 2 12th, whereas this driver has 5 11th places but only 1 12th position, so that's why he's below him. Instead, it's like, oh, that person got 13 points in the season, this person got 12, and that's why they're ahead of them in the championship. It just makes it things a bit more simple, and that's the part of me that kind of likes it and why I would actually kind of like that.
Yeah.
My simple brain just wants it, okay? I can't get over all these different, you know.
So in a perfect world, where would you expand the point? To what place would you expand the points to?
I think, to be fair, once you expand it to like 15th, for example, like we've done, then I feel like it's not too far away from just doing it down to every finish. And I don't mean classified. I don't mean a sense of like, oh, you DNF with 7 laps to go, but you were still classified, so you're allowed to finish. No, you have to cross the finish line. So you could be 7 laps down in the race, but you have to cross the finish line. However, I understand that there will be certain loopholes that teams might retire from a race and, you know, they have a problem with the car, but they can last maybe one more lap in the race and they can risk it. So they go, do you know what? Let's send this driver back out at the end for one lap and so that they cross the line and they get a point. There's going to be loopholes. And obviously there's a smarter person out there that is going to go through the rule book and make sure that that's all sorted out. Because at the moment, I don't know what would fix that. But I just know that there's some smart person out there. The fact that I've already thought of that, teams would have easily definitely thought of that.
Do you remember last year when Checo Perez was sent back out when he was like
5 times in Japan, wasn't it?
Yeah. And he was like, are you serious? And they kept saying it was like for data or I forget why they were justifying it. Like his race was over. It was done. He was so far down. And they kept sending him back out.
Wasn't it to like serve penalties so that he wouldn't get a grid place?
That's
penalty?
What it was.
I think it was to keep on like serving the penalties that he kept on getting. But yeah, oh, I mean, that's just shows like smart people will always undo stuff that maybe we want.
Picture this. You're halfway through a DIY Carfix, tools scattered everywhere, and boom, you realize you're missing a part. It's okay, because you know whatever it is, it's on eBay. They've got everything. Brakes, headlights, cold air intakes, whatever you need. And it's guaranteed to fit, which means no more crossing your fingers and hoping you ordered the right thing. All the parts you need, at prices you'll love. Guaranteed to fit, every time. eBay. Things. People. Love.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Moving on, we have a very, very special livery this week. Ooh, yeah, from we do. Alpine. Alpine revealed a Deadpool and Wolverine livery for the upcoming Marvel film starring Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman. Hayden, what do we think about this car?
I love it. I think it looks so cool. And do you know what? I am disappointed by one thing, and that is F1 has a stupid rule that both cars must look the same. Because how sick would it be if one car is as the red and black and the other car is in the Wolverine suit? That would be so sick. Sexy livery. I like it.
It would be like when BAR tried to pull the two liveries in 1999 and then had to do a split livery.
Zip. No. Ruined it. Ruined a great idea because they signed that deal.
But I agree with you. At the very least, they could have just done a Wolverine livery and a Deadpool livery for the promo.
Yeah.
And then like a proper livery for the race. I think it's awesome. I know in F1's history, we've had, you know, probably like a dozen movie liveries. Like, I think the most famous one is the 2005 Red Bull in Monaco for Star Wars Episode 3. Revenge of the Sith, which was super fun. And they'd had Darth Vader and stormtroopers walking around F1 paddock, which is hilarious. I wonder if we're going to get those sort of antics this weekend.
Oh yeah. Mechanics dressed up as Deadpool and Wolverine. That'd be sick to be fair. Yes. Cause Gasly's got a Wolverine helmet. Ocon's got a Deadpool helmet. Yeah. I'm fully, we need Deadpool walking about as the team. Yeah, I'm here for it. As long as they don't do what Jaguar once did in Monaco when they did a movie one, which was alongside maybe Ocean's 11.
Ocean's 12, I think.
Was it 12? Where they had the diamond in the front, and within like the first lap, the guy binned it into the wall, and that diamond went missing and never was found again. So some lucky marshal was just like, oh, cool, I'll take that. That's in my pocket. See you later. Someone somewhere has got that diamond, or it literally just got pinged off and has never been discovered again. And all that money gone to waste for something that is so small in the front of the car. Also,
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, why? Why is there a diamond on the front of the car? How is that past like health and safety regulations?
Well, wasn't the movie about a diamond heist? They were trying. Like, they were trying.
Just put a sticker of a diamond. Why put an actual diamond?
Speaking of moving tie-ins in Formula One, are you familiar with the old website, which is no longer up, Donkey Does F1?
No.
So like in the 2000s, when Jaguar had a Formula One team, someone got an inflatable donkey from the Shrek movies.
Okay.
And would put him in different parts of the paddock. Like they'd put donkey like in the car, in the seat. They'd put the donkey like in the on the pit lane, like on the pit wall. And it was a website that was just dedicated to pictures of Jaguar's Formula One team taking photos in weird places with the inflatable donkey.
Love it. Love it. So there's this donkey just spotted about everywhere in Formula One.
But it was like very early internet, you know, it's like even before Tumblr. Someone it was like it WordPress.
Bring it back. If you could have one film right now that would tie in with a livery with Formula One, what film or franchise would you pick?
Oh gosh, that's so hard. Do you have an answer while I think about this?
Well, I mean, going off donkey being spotted around everywhere, having a Shrek livery and the wing mirrors are Shrek's ears. But I think that would be quite fun.
Well, that'd be perfect for steak because they're green. They don't have to change their color scheme. They just have to add some ears. Shrek, you know what I want? I want a Formula One tie-in with the movie Dumb and Dumber. Did you ever see Dumb and Dumber with Jim Carrey?
I actually haven't, but I know of the film, and I know, who stars in it, but I haven't actually got around to watching it.
In the movie, the characters run a dog grooming service, and they drive a van that looks like a dog that's covered in fur and has like dog ears and a dog tongue. I want a Formula One car that looks like that has like the dog fur, the dog tongue and the floppy ears.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. The aero on that car would be absolutely atrocious, but the vibes would be immaculate.
Who's at the back of the moment? Yeah, another one for steak, I suppose. They're down at the bottom, so they're not really losing anything at the moment. So why not? Let's do it. It would be quite
also
funny.
if you were going to do a Dumb and Dumber tie-in for a Formula One team, you could do separate ones that look like the tuxedos that they wear, because you've probably seen the meme where one of them is in a orange tuxedo with a top hat, and the other's in a baby blue one, or
the
purple
helmets
one
can be like
hat.
Their hair as well, because one of them's got like a bowl cut, haven't they?
100%.
Yeah. What was I going to say? I was going to say something, and it's gone out of my head now, I think.
Was it about Dumb and Dumber?
No,
was it about Arrow?
I'm going very English right now, and I'm going like talking about like Strictly Come Dancing or like X Factor, like those shows where like every week there's a sort of a certain song or a certain genre that they obviously have to do, or a certain, like, it's movie week this week or whatever. I think Formula One should do that for the graphic designs for the livery. This race weekend is movie week, and each team has to partner up with a movie. And then
I would love that.
Yes, exactly.
That would be so much fun.
Classic week, so they got to bring back a classic livery to put on the car. F1 need to hire us because we're just pulling ideas.
For the next race at Silverstone, they need to do a crossover with Formula One and Great British Bake Off.
Oh my god.
And and every Formula One team has to pair up with a baker, like a former star baker, and the car is inspired by one of like their desserts.
What, so it's actually made out of the dessert, or is it made like a Formula One car? It's just the livery's changed. Because how far are we taken this? Is the
I think
car
just the livery's changed.
Is the car made out of cake?
Is it cake?
What if someone makes a jelly car? How's that? It's just wobbling all over the place. They're driving.
That thing's not going to make it past turn one.
You take the first corner and all the jelly just comes off. It's just the driver exposed. You know, like in cartoons where like everything falls off and it's just the wheels and the guy's standing holding the steering wheel. That's what that would be like.
I love it.
I want to know, everybody who's listening as well, let us know what film you would partner up with a livery. And yeah, what's the best one that you would take from that? Right, let's move over to Formula E season. It ended up, we talked about it last week. We kind of, you know, hyped it up, this big season finale. Seven drivers, I think, were going into it with a chance to win the championship. And then I think in the final race, it was down to four or three. And in the end, ex-Formula 1 driver Pascal Wehrlein took home the glory and the championship. So that proposes the question, is it time to bring Pascal Wehrlein back, or is Formula E a just completely different genre?
I just know that, and correct me if I'm wrong, when Pascal Wehrlein was younger, he was like, there was a lot of promise. Yeah. And people thought he could potentially be one of the next like competitive drivers, if not great drivers. And he was with Manor, and then he was with Sauber, and he had some like bad luck with Sauber. I know at the beginning of his season with Sauber, he had an injury at the Race of Champions and had to miss the first 2 weeks and was replaced with Giovinazzi. Mm-hmm. And there was just all sorts of things that happened, and he was never really able to find his form and get his footing. And I know, and I feel like it is kind of a something that's weighed on him for his career. Like, I think he desperately wants to get back to Formula One, and I think he deserves a shot to prove himself with a midfield team and maybe work his way up to a top team. But I don't know if that's ever going to happen.
I loved Pascal Wehrlein when he came into Formula One. I thought he was a great guy. There was a lot of promise about him, and I was excited for him. At, like, you know, he was in the Mercedes Academy. It was basically what George Russell was when, you know, back in 2015, 2016. But it just never really worked out. And I believe the stories are that he wasn't very cooperative with mechanics and the team, and struggled in that environment, and the team preferred Esteban Ocon over him, and that's why Esteban Ocon then went to Force India, because it could have gone either way. Esteban Ocon's career could have very much been Pascal Wehrlein's career. He could have gone to Force India up against Sergio Perez and then see how that dynamic evolved, and then potentially could have been somebody to replace Valtteri Bottas in that team instead of George Russell. So I think it's a shame, and I do wish that Pascal Wehrlein did have that opportunity, in the same way that, you know, Van Dorn was such a promising talent. But then going to McLaren, something just didn't work in that environment. Right. And unfortunately, it fell through. The biggest problem, I think, when drivers go to Formula E, and it's very similar to IndyCar, but whereas if you come through the IndyCar ranks, I don't know, you're just not looked upon very fondly from a European audience that is Formula One. And I think whereas Formula E, it's got that kind of aura to people that it's just Formula One rejects. You're not good enough for Formula One, you drive in Formula E, which I think is just completely wrong, because I think a lot of those drivers, either they have just not had the right opportunity, because there's so many drivers that come through from Formula 2, do so well, but there's just not a seat opening up for them, so they go over to Formula E and they perform well over there, or something doesn't go their way. Like, Jean-Éric Vergne was matching Daniel Ricciardo. Like, he had a good start to his season. Danny Kvyat was just a young, promising talent, very much like Max Verstappen, that they wanted to fast-track into Red Bull. So he got the seat over Jean-Éric Vergne. What could have happened with both of them, Jean-Éric Vergne and Daniel Ricciardo in Red Bull? That could have been a very interesting dynamic, for sure.
I agree. And Jev's a two-time champion in Formula E. And he's a very competitive endurance driver. Similar thing with Buemi at Toro Rosso. Like, Buemi is, at this on paper, like the best endurance driver in the world right now. I think you're absolutely right. I do feel like it is, but it also is an opportunity for Pascal Wehrlein if he decides he wants to like close the door on the dream of going back to Formula One, to lean into the success, because not only is he a world champion, he is driving for one of the most iconic brands and iconic car manufacturers ever. Like, there's something incredibly sexy about driving for Tag Heuer Porsche. And so embracing that and just trying to continue to like repeat his success from season 10 and seeing how he can grow within that ecosphere in Formula E is also, I think, like a good mentality to have.
I think the only way we can potentially see Pascal Wehrlein come back to Formula One is if Audi launch with a very strong car and perform very well from the beginning, because there's that rivalry between Audi and Porsche. They want to one-up each other. And I think if Audi are doing so well in Formula One and getting all the hiatus very early on, and it needs to happen early because obviously every year that it goes on, Pascal Wehrlein gets a little bit older. But he's a German driver. He's backed by Porsche. I don't think he'd make that switch over to an Audi team. So it would have to be Porsche buying in from somebody else. And of course, there is that RB team at the moment that I think Red Bull is very much like, if the right buyer comes in, they would sell it. So maybe Porsche could be one. They've had talks with Red Bull before, but it fell through. But maybe if Audi do so well, Porsche then come in, take over RB, and Pascal Wehrlein's opportunity is there. But unfortunately, other than that, I just can't see a way for Pascal Wehrlein, sadly, to get back into Formula One, which I think is just such a shame that this vision of Formula E is there, that it is just, oh, you're just Formula One rejects and that's all you are, and you can fight with each other in your own championship, because there is a lot of talented drivers over there.
And it's also a very different style of racing. Mm-hmm. So many drivers who go over to Formula E talk about the adjustment and how hard it is getting used to the car. And it's just like, it's a different style of racing. It's a different, completely different strategy. I think it's like, branding wise, it has an incredible product. I think the races are very exciting. I think the marketing and the packaging at Formula E is very good. They just don't have fans. It's a newer series. It's only 10 years old, but, I just think it's getting better. This season was really exciting. The way the championship came down to the very final race, just like even the last like 20 laps of the race, like we halfway through the race, we thought Nick Cassidy, who was sitting in third, and Pascal Wehrlein and Mitch Evans still had to take their attack mode to get off and go off the racing line. It was very possible that Nick Cassidy was going to win that race. Mm-hmm. And he ended up getting a puncture from Antonio Felix da Costa, which was an accident and he apologized for. But like so much was happening in that race that we had 20 minutes left in the race and we had no idea who was going to win the championship. It has a long way to go, but just want to say congratulations to TCS Jaguar Racing on winning the team championship, and congratulations to Pascal Wehrlein and Porsche on winning the driver's championship and the manufacturer's championship.
Yeah, incredible, incredible stuff.
Picture this. You're halfway through a DIY Carfix, tools scattered everywhere, and boom. You realize you're missing a part. It's okay, because you know whatever it is, it's on eBay. They've got everything. Brakes, headlights, cold air intakes, whatever you need. And it's guaranteed to fit, which means no more crossing your fingers and hoping you ordered the right thing. All the parts you need at prices you'll love. Guaranteed to fit every time. eBay. Things. People. Love.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Right, let's move over from Formula E back to Formula One. And this weekend is the Belgian Grand Prix, our last race before the summer break. And there's a lot to talk about already going into it, because for Spa, we've got what is kind of teasing up to be maybe a championship battle. But
I'll be right back. Hold on, sorry.
Oh, James is going to be right back. He's going to surprise us with something once again. We're doing podcasts with James, you never understand, or you can never just sit back and relax and just expect it to be normal. He's going to pull something out of the bag. I don't know what he's going to come back with. Last time it was a Hungry Hippo's hat, and then he dressed up as Matteo Bonotto. So I don't know what he's going to come back with this week. So let's just ramble on a little bit and talk about Spa. And it is, of course, the British Grand Prix, the Belgian Grand Prix. Here he is. Ah, okay. I see what you're doing. Have we got some cucumbers? Let me put his headphones on. James has come back.
All right, here we go.
Is there any cucumbers on your eyes?
Not yet. I need to go to the grocery store to get some cucumbers.
Okay, we're gonna. So let's just talk very zen now. Spa weekend. James has got a towel around his head. He's got a robe on. He's nice and chill. And now we're just going to chill and talk about this weekend's Spa Grand Prix in the Ardenne Forest. A beautiful landscape to watch Formula
Just beautiful
One
trees everywhere. Beautiful trees everywhere. Barns.
What's your favorite part about Spa weekend?
I think it's just that there's something very magical about being out there. First of all, where are we going this weekend, Hayden? Where's Formula One going this weekend?
We're going to Spa.
We're going to the spa.
I got the joke. I think everyone at home has got the joke of why
oh, you got it? Like you got it? Because I'm dressed up like I'm going to the spa.
Yes, that's why I asked if you got Q. Where's the cucumber? Where else are you going to have the cucumber?
I don't know, in a salad?
I think that's a fair point. That's a fair point. Yeah, okay.
I'm excited for a spot. I just like, I know you could probably speak more on this than I can. Can you take me seriously talking like this?
I'm just loving you trying to keep the towel on, and it just looks like you're tensing your neck.
It's
so much
so hard to keep this towel on right now.
If you sat normally, I feel like that towel's falling in front of you.
It's falling right off. Oh wait, no, it's staying on.
There you go. Let's hold it.
Anyway. Fine. You are a seasoned sim racer. The Spa seems like a track that is a favorite for drivers and fans alike. There's a long history. I know in its current iteration, Spa has been on the Formula One calendar since what, 1983? Does that sound right?
Yeah, but I think it's been like a staple in Formula One all the way since really like the beginning.
It was, but there was like a 13-year period where it was not on the calendar, and I think specifically it was for safety reasons.
Possibly, yeah, because it was basically like the Nordschleife in terms of it was so long. It was just this massive drive basically through the forest. Not quite the green hell like the Nordschleife, but yeah.
Okay. I believe it was originally like a 14-kilometer track, mm-hmm. and now it's about half that size.
Yeah.
It was like the size of like Le Mans.
Pretty, I mean, like even bigger than that. It was massive. Like it was absolutely huge.
All right, I have to take this off. Hold on.
You take that off. I will talk a little bit about Spa. And I think it's such a beautiful place. I have had the luxury of going there a couple of times in the past. I think I've been to Spa 3 times now, and I could not recommend it as a race more. It's a place to watch Formula One cars in beautiful nature, and you can just be sat at one corner and you can see cars way off in the distance between a small little gap in the trees. And I think it just is an absolute beautiful place to go, a great place to watch racing. And I think there's a lot of really good vibes at Spa.
And you can camp there too, right?
You can. That's the one thing I hate about it. I hate camping. Those who know me know that I hate camping. It's the worst thing ever. One, it doesn't help if you're over 6 foot and you're camping, because you really struggle to find 2-man tents that fit that size. I went with my girlfriend. Tents are made for small people. We bought a tent, and the canvas was basically covering my face, and it nearly choked me out in the night at one point.
So, Hayden, you and I think, are kindred spirits on this. Like, I think we're like twinsies. I also hate camping.
Horrible.
There is something I'm going to sound awful saying this, but like, I'm terrified of nature. Like, okay. I do not like being out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, but you're like, from America. It's different. You've got bears that will come and kill you. Like, in our nature, true. What have we got? Maybe a squirrel?
Your bears are very polite.
Yeah, our bears are very polite. A squirrel might come down and grab your nuts, but that's about it.
Grab your You mean like your cashews and your pistachios
yeah, exactly.
that
Who
are sitting on the plane
in their pocket, you know?
Yeah, I know I do. But so Spa's always been a favorite of fans. It's a favorite of drivers. But I think like the one caveat to that is that it's still notoriously a very dangerous track.
I think you can say that about any Formula One track, in all honesty. You know, you look at Jeddah, that is a dangerous track. I think the danger of Spa is Eau Rouge, and they said obviously about the lack of runoff area, and of course the cars bouncing off, and that unfortunately is what killed Hubert a few years ago, sadly. You know, it was the car going off into the barrier, but it was the bouncing back and into the path of the other drivers. I know unfortunately There was another young driver who passed away very recently, but that was
last year in Formula Ford. It was Dylan Vanderhoff.
That wasn't down to the circuit, and I think a lot of people would agree that it was down to. I don't want to blame individuals because there's a lot of people in motorsport, but whoever sadly made that decision that it was okay to run in those conditions, that those people should be held responsible in the way that we can look at what went wrong and make sure that that doesn't happen again. And that was ultimately what was the problem. Again, okay, it was an issue where a car hit a barrier and it bounced back, but it was also in blindingly wet conditions that allowed very, very little visibility. And it just makes it so difficult. And then unfortunately, if a car bounces back into the track, you're just a passenger if you hit it because you cannot see. You cannot predict that it's going to be there. And I think every circuit has its dangerous notions.
So if I ask you, is Spa too dangerous to stay on the Formula One calendar in its current form? You're saying it's as dangerous as a lot of other circuits, with the exception of driving in the wet.
Yeah, I think so. I think it is as dangerous. I think if you ask that question, I think the correct answer is every circuit is dangerous. Every circuit has the capabilities to be dangerous. It's all about looking at those risks and making sure that you are prepared for them in the best way, and you're not doing things that are going to increase those risks. For example, you know, driving in blind conditions. These Formula One cars, these with the ground effect and the chunky tires and the amount of water that they're spraying up, that it makes it very difficult to run in full wet conditions because it just produces so much spray and so much lack of visibility. And if you're driving around in torrential conditions with cars like that, you're increasing that risk. And then you're putting yourself in a place that if there is an incident, then something really, really bad can happen. So I do think that it's as dangerous as other circuits, but I wouldn't say, oh, it's so dangerous it shouldn't be on the calendar.
It's interesting. Fair. I know it's such an iconic track. It's such a favorite for so many people. I do think that maybe there needs to be some changes to the track to make it safer. I'm not a seasoned enough fan or a seasoned enough expert to tell you what those are. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting that these conversations about Spa have been going on since the 1960s. I referenced this movie in an earlier podcast, the 1966 film Grand Prix.
Yeah.
It's amazing when you watch that film, how even though so much has changed in Formula One, how much it is still the same. There's like a line from a Ferrari executive in that movie where he's like, 30 people are talented enough to drive a Formula One car. Only 6 are good enough to compete for a world championship. And at any given time, only 1 or 2 are good enough to ever be considered great. And then the other side of that is there's a scene in that movie where drivers are called together in a driver's meeting to talk about whether they should boycott driving in Spa because they think it's too dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, they had the same, the very famous film, obviously Rush, which is obviously based on the real events of the 1976 season and the battle between Niki Lauda and James Hunt. You know, it was very similar. It's a very similar story to Nordschleife. And I think it is very similar to Nordschleife in the same sense, but that it's a, I mean, I know that the Spa circuit is built on a protected area. Basically, it's very difficult to change that circuit and that layout because you cannot build outside of what is existing. Really, you cannot go into the forest area because it's protected. You can't do that. So I think with Spa, it's one of those things that is going to be very difficult to make changes. And it's really that choice of being like, is it going to be on the calendar or not on the calendar if things like that happen? Luckily, with Formula One, deaths have occurred so infrequently now. Like it's not something like back in the 60s and the 70s where it happens all the time. And obviously, we had that freak day in Imola where we lost 2 lives on the same weekend, and then had a huge crash for Rubens Barrichello as well. It was very unfortunate, the crash that happened with Huber, and then of course last season as well. But we have stories around other circuits or of incidents and drivers that have passed away. But we're just in a very lucky stage now in Formula One and also in motorsports that they are infrequent and we have some really good safety standards. But also at the same time, there is more that can be done. And I think a lot of the time with safety, it is done a little bit too late. And, you know, Spa could be taken off the calendar because there's a freak crash and unfortunately somebody is really, really injured, and people might look back at this and say, well, you said it was safe enough. But in the same way, at the start of when the Halo came in, I said it was really ugly and it shouldn't be in Formula One. But then obviously what it's done since it's come in, I think within the first season, I immediately changed my mind. I think there was a huge crash for Charles Leclerc in Spa where a car went over the top, and straight away I was like, okay, I was massively wrong about this system. It also doesn't look ugly. You're just used to it now, but it's a massive factor in Formula One, and it's saved, I feel like, so many lives already.
It's the same thing with the aero screen in IndyCar. Mm-hmm. We recently saw a crash in Toronto where if Pato O'Ward hadn't had that aero screen, he could have been seriously injured, if not killed.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah. So I think often, like, you know, we sit here and we love to make jokes and we love to make memes, but we often forget that these drivers, like, I know they chose this career and they chose this path, but they risk their lives every time they get in that car. It's like incredibly dangerous and the stakes are incredibly high. And I think we often forget that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we do. And I think Formula One is dangerous on any circuit. You saw Bahrain, for example. Who would have thought going there that, you know, Roman Grosjean, you know, was seconds away potentially from death at Bahrain. Yeah. And if he died at Bahrain, could Bahrain have been questioned to be like, is this circuit too dangerous because of the way that the barriers were set up and they didn't have the correct barriers in front of the Armco? You know, I think these questions do need to be asked. And sadly, I think with Formula One, it sometimes is reactive and not proactive. And unless something happens, then it's not fixed. For example, you know, when we lost Jules Bianchi, it was one of those things that people didn't really massively think about, having a truck on track, removing a car when other cars are going around. But then since that happened, virtual safety car was introduced. They have massively restricted the amount that the truck should be on the track. And of course, they made a massive error in Japan. I think that was either last season or the season before. But unfortunately, we live in a world with Formula One where it's sometimes a little bit too reactive, but sometimes you don't know what those risks are until they happen. Sadly, you cannot predict some of them at the same time of things that are going to happen. So, yeah, I think coming back to that question, I think Spa is just as dangerous as any other circuit.
Fair enough. That was a long walk to get, but we got there.
We got there. Spa is a long walk, I tell you that. I've been there. There is a lot of walking. If anybody's going there this weekend, you better take in your walking boots. If you've just got some like Converse trainers, you're in big, big trouble. You're going to have some sore feet.
But I will say the one adverse effect of having trucks and cranes lifting cars off the track is we get a full view of that floor, right?
Yeah, we do. Especially Monaco, raise that car as high as you want. Let's get the camera out, boys.
moving on. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to move on as well and go into the big news, obviously, for going into Spa, is Max Verstappen having it's going to be a 10-place grid penalty for an engine change. Obviously, they're kind of on the back foot in terms of the championship fight versus McLaren already at the moment. 10 places lost at Spa. That could be big.
Yeah. I just given how the performance and the car's been in the last few races, I don't see him able. I don't see Max Verstappen to be able to like make it all the way up to P1. Like, I don't even know if he can podium starting that far back. And he still that's given that he still qualifies P1. With a 10 place grid penalty. So like, I don't know. I'm really interested to see what kind of time he can make up from the back or from the midfield.
Yeah, I think if we look at where the cars are at the moment and where they are in terms of performance, you'd say McLaren's looking like the best car. So they're put one and two, locked out, Piastri and Norris. So I think Red Bull is maybe third, or at least with Verstappen behind the wheel, it's the second best car. So third position is what I'm expecting in qualifying from Max. If he can get more, great. If he gets less, he's going to be in more trouble. So that's 13th position. Unless anybody else takes any penalties after him, then it'd be bumped up because he took his first. So he's going to need a really good start, first of all, to put himself in a best position to get past, obviously, the slower drivers. But then you've got the likes of the Ferraris, who are still quick. Mercedes, they can qualify well, still quick. So yeah, I think it could be difficult. I think the podium is maybe the best that they can aim for. Over this weekend coming, but of course it could potentially be less, and that's going to allow Lando Norris to catch up even more, but also potentially for McLaren to catch up quite a bit. They're now second in the Constructors' Championship. They're odds on favourites, actually, to or they're looking a lot better to win the Constructors' Championship this season. A lot of this race is really putting more pressure on Perez, who's already under pressure, and they've said that they're going to make a decision after Spa. He has to perform well. This is his chance to be like, okay, Max is down at the start of this race. You've got to be our front runner for this race and put the car at least in third position.
Yeah. From your experience sim racing on the Spa circuit, are there a lot of opportunities for overtaking?
Yeah. Yeah. I think this is probably one of the best places to take an engine penalty. You take an engine penalty at the likes of Monza, at a Spa, because they have such long straights and easier opportunities to overtake. You wouldn't take an engine penalty at Monaco, for example, because it's just stupid. You're not going to make those positions back. Singapore as well, and also Hungary are ones that you're just going to be unlikely to make those positions back. So Spa's one of those, at least he can do it. And he did it, you know, 22. I think he went down to 14th position after an engine penalty, came back, and I think he won the race by a long, long way. But
wild.
He had a dominant car there. He doesn't have a dominant car anymore. So this is going to be a testing factor, not only for Max, but also for the team, and also to see, you know, where that team ranks up. Have Red Bull gone on the back foot, and where are they now if they have a problem? It's going to be interesting. It's also going to be interesting what happens on the team radio this weekend. Obviously, we saw the frustrations last weekend between him and GP, which there was a great interview with Martin Brundle over the weekend that was... He massively dismissed, obviously, the sim racing stuff and staying up too late, but the disrespect maybe towards the team that put him in that position was maybe gone a little bit too far. And I think, you know, whilst you have to address these issues head on and you have to, you know, be outspoken about it, sometimes maybe slagging off the team a little bit is not best. And we hope not to see this again and not get that head loss.
You and I are starting to see a lot of meme pages make the joke that we made on the pod of Toto messaging back saying, you can sim race all you want.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to happen. He's going to come out and be like, yeah, we don't care. We don't care. Although there has been quite a lot of rumors dropped in the last 2 days that Kimi Antonelli is virtually signed by Mercedes for next season, which is a massive turnaround. So unless Red Bull, but I also did hear rumors that Red Bull have kind of sorted out a loophole in the contract regarding Helmut Marko, and that Max will be locked in anyway till the end of 26 of this version of the contract and wouldn't be able to step away until then. So maybe because of that, Mercedes now have no chance of getting Max and gone, okay, well, Kimi Antonelli performed really well at Hungary. Let's get him in.
Yeah. Cool. Moving on.
Spa predictions.
Would you like to go first, or should I go first?
Well, I think we're going to have a relaxing weekend. I'm fancying a little bit of time in maybe the hot tub and just sort of chilling in there. Maybe I'll take a dip into one of the saunas and just nice relax, sweat it all out. But then after a sauna, it's good to then get into one of those ice cold like dipping pools. So just to really, you know, close off those pores and kind of shock the body a little bit. And then probably after that, spend a bit more time in the jacuzzi and really relax this weekend. What about you?
I meant predictions for the race at Spa.
Oh, okay. Yeah, a bit of confusion, I suppose, going on there. Race predictions for Spa. Let's go for Lando Norris P1. I'm going to say Piastri P2. I'm then going to say Lewis Hamilton P3, Russell P4, Max P5.
Okay. I have a similar one. I have Norris P1, Piastri P2. I'm going to give Carlos Sainz P3.
Oh, okay.
Hamilton P4, Max P5.
Max P5, okay. Do you think Max can recover to P5? I think P5 is kind of like the expectation, but I think there's also a good chance that he could get into P3. It just depends, I suppose, how early he gets past maybe the midfield cars, I suppose.
Yeah. So last question. We're at the Belgian Grand Prix this weekend. Who is your favorite Belgian? Romelu Lukaku, Stoffel Van Dorn, or Jean-Claude Van Damme?
Who the hell was that?
You don't know who Jean-Claude Van Damme is?
I'm not good with names.
He's a very famous movie star and martial artist.
No idea.
You've never seen Bloodsport?
You're talking way before my time, brother. You're talking way before my time. I was
Jean-Claude Van Damme is iconic.
In 1996, and these movies are coming up before I was born. your age, sir.
Oh, I'm old as hell. I was born in 1984. You've never seen Time Cop?
Nope.
Never seen Bloodsport?
Nope.
Oh my gosh.
I'm looking at these movies now, and I have not seen any of them.
You haven't seen a single Jean-Claude Van Damme
movie?
Maybe
The Expendables 2, but I don't remember anything from it.
You've never seen Universal Soldier, Kickboxer?
Nope.
You never seen the Street Fighter movie? He played Guile in the Street Fighter movie.
Street Fighter? I don't think so.
Oh, man. You're missing out.
I'm so sorry. I feel like I've massively offended you.
He was just like this. He was like the action star of like one of the action stars of the 80s and 90s. You know, it was like Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone, and then it was Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Well, I'm so sorry.
Also, he can do a full split, which is very impressive for someone. Yeah, it's very impressive for someone as jacked as he is.
Well, then we got to go for him then. Just because I feel like I've offended you by not knowing, I'm going to have to.
Well, if you don't know who he is, who's your favorite Belgian, Lukaku or Stoffel Van Dorn?
Out of those two, I would probably say Stoffel. I feel like he's just such a nice bloke. He just seems so sweet.
He's very nice. I got a chance to interview him a couple times, and he was the nicest guy.
Yeah. I feel like that's not a surprise.
And he, I think, is testing the AMR-24 at Spa this weekend.
Oh, is he?
I don't think he's driving like a practice session, but I think he is testing it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a shame. Because I know that they have to do, obviously, like two times a year, they have to replace one of their drivers in an FP1 with a junior driver. Junior driver doesn't always mean. Once upon a time, Fernando Alonso took part in the young driver's rookies test after he retired first from Formula 1 and then decided to come back. So he did a rookies test despite having two world championships. So I don't know. I feel like Van Dorn might still classify as being able to do that running.
So Stoffel Van Dorn is testing the AMR 24 next week on Tuesday and Wednesday, but it is at Spa.
Okay. Is it like the Pirelli tire test? Is that what they're doing that weekend?
Yeah, it's Pirelli tire test.
Okay, fair. But yeah, I'd go Stoffel Van Dorn for me on that one.
Fair enough.
Yeah. You would probably go for Jean-Claude Van Damme.
I'm going for JCVD, baby.
JCVD. Why does that just sound so weird?
It sounds like a venereal disease. It sounds like an STD.
It's like JCB's cousin. That's what it is.
JCVD is something you find out you get when you go to the doctor after a holiday where you had too much to drink. Anyway.
I don't think that's a perfect way to wrap up this week's podcast. That is going to wrap up our predictions for Spa. Let us know what you think is going to happen for this Spa weekend. Make sure you follow us on whatever audio platform you're currently listening to, and also follow us on our socials, the official WTF1. And also go follow myself and James on whatever social platform you want to as well. Any last words, James?
No.
I put you massively on the spot, and I'm so glad that you have nothing. And that is
I got nothing.
You've got nothing left, is Ian.
Hey, I hope everybody has a relaxing weekend at Spa.
And James will make sure he gets some cucumber from the shop for his relaxing weekend. Thank you for listening. We'll see you on the next one. Bye-bye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know that many products for pregnant women do not have their own clinical trials for safety or efficacy? That's because pregnant women are often excluded from clinical studies. Ritual is aiming to set a new standard with their essential prenatal multivitamin. It's the number one best-selling prenatal and the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Moms taking Essential Prenatal had a lower overall cortisol level during pregnancy than those taking a leading prenatal. Plus, it's designed to be gentle on the stomach. Ritual doesn't just have your back. They have the receipts. Get 25% off at ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's Essential Prenatal Multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.